So the Dhamma for today is the Pabbajita Binha, the topics for frequent reflection by those who have gone forth. From the Anguttara Nikaya Dasaka Nipata, Akosavaga, Sutta number 8. The Pabbajita Binha. Pabbajita is someone who has left home. So these dhammas are especially directed towards monastics, those who have taken up a life outside of worldly society. But many of these are applicable to those living in society as Buddhists, people who practice Buddhism, and certainly are appropriate mostly for those who come to do intensive meditation practice. Also of interest, particularly to those who are interested in taking up monastic life, dedicating themselves wholeheartedly to the Buddhist teaching. This gives some insight into the outlook that is expected or encouraged from those who have gone forth. Really the way one should approach life and one's goals and ambitions as a monastic or as a recluse, as someone who has Pabbajita, who has gone forth, left behind the world. 10 of them. So these 10 are topics for frequent reflection. Reflection isn't something commonly discussed in Buddhism, something that we maybe overlook a little bit in favor of the more formal practice of mindfulness and meditation. Now, meditation in a Buddhist context refers to formal application of mind in a structured, regimented way. So in our tradition, the formal act of noting as a mantra to remind yourself of the nature of the experience, and formally taking an object of watching the stomach rise and fall, or even being mindful throughout the day, mindful of walking, mindful of standing, mindful of seeing, hearing, and so on. This is meditation. Reflection is a little bit different, but still something the Buddha did encourage on many different occasions in many different contexts. So something that as Buddhists we do encourage and dedicate ourselves to engage in. The idea is that reflection is a means of correcting, adjusting, reinforcing, encouraging yourself in the right direction. So reflection is in this context is very much related to correcting mistakes or correcting bad habits and encouraging good habits by taking the time to think about what you're doing and compare what you're doing to what the Buddha taught and that sort of thing. So something that we might do from time to time or in between practice or before undertaking practice, or in this case abhinna, which means frequently, so something that maybe daily we check ourselves and remind ourselves, maybe even more than daily, maybe multiple times per day. These are also a topic that comes up during evening chanting. So something that we might every day chant to ourselves as a means of reminding ourselves of the things that we should be focused on. So these 10 are, first of all, we should reflect that as one who has gone forth, I am without station in society, that I am vivanna literally means without color or class. So in ordinary society in India there was this idea of vanna, which relates to the color of one's skin sort of abstractly, but came to mean one's class in society, one's social status. So this means that we have a stake in society. The point here relates to our involvement and our engagement with worldly affairs. Obviously for monks this is not something that's appropriate, something that we should be focused on. It's a reminder that the world is not our concern. And as Buddhists in general, shouldn't be our major concern. The world, the ways of the world, the good and the bad, the improvement of society or the devolution of society, wars and conflicts and political strife, these things are temporary. These things are not of ultimate concern and shouldn't be of ultimate concern to anyone. They are things that are of immediate concern, and those living in society have to take part and have to engage in. But any Buddhist should set their heart on more important affairs like birth and death and suffering and defilement, the quality of our minds. So our life as monks or our life as meditation practitioners in the Buddhist teaching should be focused on that which is really important, and we should be reminding ourselves that we are no longer a part or we're no longer focused on the ways of the world. This also means that we have no station, that no matter whether we were rich or poor before, now we are nobody. Nobody, not in the sense of low class, but also not in the sense of high class. We don't have a rank, we don't have a station. We're outside of society. We shouldn't get involved, and we shouldn't hold ourselves up as better or worse than anyone because of our past, because of our background. So we come here with a clean slate, and we remind ourselves frequently that we are nothing in society, that our lives are dedicated to spiritual affairs and the Buddha's teaching. Number two, my life, my livelihood is dependent on other people. This is something for frequent reflection, obviously specifically for those who have undertaken the life of a Buddhist monastic, but also can be applied to those undertaking intensive meditation practice, that we are here out of the grace and the generosity and the kindness of others. This allows us to continue. We don't charge for these courses. No one comes here paying for these courses. We are here through the generosity, and we are able to live and continue to do what we do through the generosity of others. So this is a good reminder for us to be honest and to be sincere and to have integrity to our life, reminding us to live up to the expectations and the hopes and the wishes of those who have wished us to be able to have this opportunity. It also means to be content, that as monastics or meditators, whatever we get, we should be content with, because not only is this a good Buddhist practice, but it's also a sign of appreciation and a means of being what the Buddha called subhara, easy to accommodate, easy to support. As Buddhist practitioner, as Buddhist monastics and meditation practitioners, we in order to maintain this sort of life where we are free from the obligations of society, we need a high level of integrity to be able to be worthy of being supported in this way, that we can't be greedy or begging or picky. We can't be picky with what we use to sustain our lives. So the Buddha was very often reminding and encouraging us to be content with whatever requisites, whatever we might come our way, whether we get food or don't get food, whether we get good food or bad food and clothes and dwelling, whatever we get, to be content with it is really the only way to justify this sort of activity. That end, it gives great confidence and happiness to those who have supported us when they hear that we are doing good, and when they have confidence in us and appreciation for the work that we do as monastics and meditators. The third reflection is there are other behaviors or ways of comporting myself that I should undertake. Meaning there's more to be done. The way it's written is sort of like, as a Buddhist monastic or meditator, I should deport myself differently from others. Anyo me akapo karaniyo. I should deport myself differently. So on the surface, it could be seen to just mean, well, as a monk, we deport ourselves differently. We have to be composed. We have to be not fidgeting with our bodies, not fidgeting with our hands and our feet, not dancing or singing or running or engaging in activity that is unbecoming of a monastic. But on a deeper level, this really means there is more for us to be done. The commentary explains it as having a deeper meaning, that we should always be thinking there is more that I need to do. Anyo me akapo karaniyo. What I am doing now isn't enough. There is more that I should be doing. And this idea is this Buddha's teaching of discontent. That I just finished saying that we should be very content with what we get, but at the same time, we should be never content with what we do, with what we've done. We should never be content with our attainments, content with our level of practice, and we should always remind ourselves there is still more to be done. We should frequently reflect on the fact that there is still more refinement that can be undertaken. My practice is not perfect. My mindfulness is not complete. My wisdom is not mature. And there is more that I can do to attain higher and higher attainments. Ultimately, it means that we should deport ourselves as an arahant, and we should be thinking that until we've reached that state, there is still more to be done. Once we reach the state of being an arahant, meaning we have purified our minds, we have come to free ourselves from delusion and ignorance, seen the Four Noble Truths in perfect clarity, and become free from craving and clinging and suffering. Until we reach that state, there is still more to be done. This is someone who deports themselves well. And I, who have not attained that, still have more to be done. This should be frequently reflected upon by those who've undertaken the Buddha's teaching in earnest. The next number four is we should ask ourselves, is there not anything that I could criticize myself about in regards to morality? So, in regards to my ethics, my behavior, in regards to who I am, is there not something I can see for myself that I am doing wrong that I could change, that I could fix? So, it just means we should take time to remind ourselves and to check ourselves. Is there something that maybe I'm being lazy about or sloppy about or cultivating a bad habit that I could fix, that I could change? Constantly remind ourselves, look, I know this is wrong and I know I could fix it, and to remind ourselves to make effort to change the things that we can see about ourselves that need to be changed. Number five, similarly, is there anything that those who know, those who are wise, my fellows in the holy life, that if they knew about it, maybe they don't know that I have this bad habit or this bad behavior, if they knew about it, would they censure me? We should ask ourselves, is there nothing, is there no small thing that I am doing, small or large, that I am doing, that if others knew about it, they would censure me? So reflecting in this way helps to give us a sense of shame and guilt and a feeling of urgency when we become complacent, thinking that no one knows or no one knows about my bad habits or my bad qualities, that there is no danger because no one knows about it. But when we think like this, we remind ourselves that if these people knew, I would be very embarrassed and ashamed. And it's a way of encouraging ourselves and giving us a sense of urgency to change when we think about, if only other people knew, they would not approve of this. It would be good if I were to change this about myself. Number six, we should often reflect that everything that we hold dear, everything that we love, will eventually be separated from us. If not in this life, then when we die, everything will disappear. Now, this is, of course, a staple of the Buddha's teaching, a big reason for anyone to undertake spiritual practice, to try and find higher meaning when they appreciate that the things that they find meaning in a worldly sphere, find meaning in the worldly sphere, are not able to bring them peace or happiness because they will eventually disappear, because they are impermanent, as the Buddha's teaching on impermanent. But for monastics and Buddhist meditators, obviously we have the capacity or the opportunity to reflect on this and to face this and challenge, confront this on a more deeper level. During our practice of mindfulness, we're able to see that everything, good or bad, is changing, is unpredictable. And so we're able to really take this teaching to heart. But this is really in the essence of the reason why we become, a big reason why we come to practice the Buddha's teaching, that nothing is permanent, nothing lasts. This is a great way for us to change our attitude. It can also be valuable for those who are considering disrobing. So this is a teaching for monks, and sometimes a monk might think of all the pleasure that they found in life and be deluded into thinking that somehow that would make them happy if they were to disrobe and to go and find sensual pleasure in a worldly sphere. So reminding yourself, anything that I were to find that would make me happy and bring me pleasure in this life would ultimately be impermanent and would be separated from me. Any person or experience that I held dear, I would ultimately lose, ultimately have to face the loss of it. I mean, it wouldn't ever be a source of satisfaction or ultimate happiness, because anytime happiness depends on something, then it disappears and is replaced with dissatisfaction when that object disappears. Number seven, I am the owner of my kamma, my deeds, my actions. I am heir to my kamma, to my deeds, to my actions. I am born of my actions. I am bound to my actions. I have my actions as my final resort, meaning ultimately it is our deeds, good and bad deeds, that make up a dwelling for us to live in. They become us. Who we are is very much a product of what we have done. And what we do now will ultimately give us a bed to lie in, will give us a house to dwell in, a dwelling. Our karma is very much a part of who we are. This is, of course, another core teaching of the Buddha, something that everyone knows about Buddhism as teaching, that it teaches the importance and the power of good deeds and bad deeds, and the power that they have over our lives and over our happiness. That our happiness and our suffering aren't just random, unrelated experience events that occur at whim. They're very much related to how we approach life. So this sort of reminder is valuable for all Buddhists, to think about our deeds, think about the things that we do physically, think about our speech, that we the things we say, and to think about our state of mind, what we fill our minds with. Do we fill our minds with kind thoughts, friendly thoughts, mindful, wise, clear thoughts? Or do we spend time polluting our minds, filling our minds with greed, with anger, with delusion? That these things will shape who we are, they will shape our future, that we will become them. We will become the product of our good and bad deeds. This reminder is, of course, valuable for any Buddhist. For those, again, who are undertaking intensive practice or living as Buddhist monastics, we have the privilege and the opportunity to really take this to heart, and with every little action we perform throughout the day, because we're not bound to worldly affairs, we can approach every little activity, from walking to standing to eating to cleaning to bathing to sleeping. Everything we do during the day can be approached as an opportunity to cultivate wholesome and clear states of mind that are then productive of happiness and peace and clarity and wisdom. Kamma, reminding ourselves of the importance of good kamma, doing good deeds. The good deeds of meditation, the good deeds of kindness, and so on. And number eight, that we should often reflect that the days and nights go by. How am I living? How am I comporting myself? How are they going by in my life? Life goes by very quickly. It can seem like we have forever, like life is very stable. We don't see ourselves aging moment after moment, and yet it's happening moment after moment. And suddenly you wake up and realize that days, weeks, months, years, decades, your whole life goes by quite quickly, in fact. There's a story of two devas, one of them, two angels up in heaven, and angels live a very long life compared to human beings, and one of them died in the morning and was reborn a human, lived her whole life as a human being, died again, and came back around noon to the angel world. And the other angel said, where have you been? I didn't see you this morning. She said, oh, I died and went to earth and lived a whole life down there. And he was just shocked. He said, human beings have such short lives. They must really be desperate to do good deeds, knowing that their lives are so short. And she said, no, mostly they're pretty negligent. There's a Buddhist story from one of the commentaries, a reminder that our lives are short, and a criticism of anyone who takes life for granted, because life is something that passes you by very quickly. And so reminding ourselves, reflecting often on the fact that it goes by quickly, as a means of encouraging ourselves to make use of our lives. Anyone who has come to do an intensive meditation course, who has undertaken intensive meditation practice, has certainly taken that to heart, or certainly taken the essence of that to heart in terms of giving their life meaning and giving their life purpose. So very much to be appreciated, something that we should remind ourselves and reflect on why are we here, and whether what we're doing, when we wonder whether what we're doing is of great value, we can think of this and remember, life is short. We shouldn't just fritter it away with meaningless, useless indulgences. Number nine, we should often reflect, as a question, do I rejoice, or do I find happiness? Do I enjoy, you could say, an empty dwelling, sunyagara, solitude? Do I enjoy solitude, basically? Am I able to find comfort or peace in solitude, in an empty dwelling? The point being that it's actually quite hard to do this, and it's quite common, of course, to be dissatisfied by being alone, by being in solitude. Many people would be horrified at the idea of having to be alone with themselves, of having nothing to entertain them, no person to interact with. To be alone is a great fear of much of the human population. And this is something, of course, the Buddha identified, but also something that he pointed out as being what makes it so valuable. Our fear, our inability to be alone with ourselves, is a cause of so much stress and suffering. Our need for validation, or our need for appreciation, our need for praise and encouragement, and our need for companionship, our need for others to make us happy, our need for happiness to be from something external, is so devastatingly stressful, a cause of such great suffering, that when we are finally able to be with ourselves, it's such a relief. When we are finally able to find peace and happiness being alone, it is such a relief and such a freedom and such a blessing, something that allows us to then live in society or not live in society, but not be dependent on externalities or external things to bring us happiness, to bring us peace. So this is something we often should reflect on. Am I at peace? Am I at ease? Am I able to be happy being alone? It's a good way of identifying the areas that you have to work on, whether it's something that you wish you were doing, or something that is uncomfortable for you, something that you yearn for, long for. And this is a good reminder to help us direct our attention, towards freeing ourselves from these bonds, the bondage of the need for socialization, the need for stimulation, entertainment, and so on. And finally, number 10, is there in me, within me, is there any superior, well, supermundane attainment that I can claim for myself, such that when I die, I will be able to, in my last breath, in my last moment, if anyone were to ask me, what was your life worth? What good was your life? I would not be ashamed, I would not be afraid to answer them, that I would be able to say, I have done something, I have accomplished something of true and ultimate benefit to myself and to the world. So in Buddhism, the goal is not just to become a better person gradually, step by step, to purify our minds and to have clear states of mind, but ultimately to use those to attain what is considered a higher, super mundane realization. I mean, it's a fancy word that just means a realization that frees us from attachment to the world, that our ordinary introspection and investigation of how the mind works helps us to see more clearly why we suffer and how to change and how to better relate to the world around us. But ultimately, that's not enough to free us, completely from attachment to the world. That ultimately, it's possible once we leave and go back to our lives, or over the over time, it's possible for us to revert and to increase and feed the defilements and regain all the delusion and greed and anger that we have left behind. But through the gradual purification that we practice, eventually we come to the point where we're able to see so clearly that the mind actually lets go and enters into or experiences a state that we call Nibbana, which the unbinding, meaning the mind no longer clings, no longer seeks out. So it's a state of cessation where there is complete silence and peace, freedom from thought, freedom from mental activity completely, an experience that leaves someone changed on a fundamental level, seeing the world in a new way and realizing that any kind of happiness or satisfaction that we might find in the world is ultimately meaningless, pointless, unsatisfying, not a source of true happiness when compared to this super mundane state of Nibbana, of freedom from suffering, that is true peace that leaves one with such resounding, profound peace and satisfaction that one never has to go looking for sensual pleasure in the world again. So this is the kind of thing, this is the thing that one could then say one has truly gained as a true benefit through the practice of the Buddha's teaching. If, and insofar as we haven't attained that, this reflection is important for us. So asking ourselves, have we or have we not? I can say I'm a good monk, I'm a good meditator, I'm a good Buddhist, I'm a good person, all we want, but none of that is of any ultimate meaning from a Buddhist perspective. If we haven't attained this state of supermundane cessation and peace and happiness and freedom from suffering, there is still more work to be done. So always asking ourselves, have I or have I not? And insofar as we haven't, there's still more work to be done. So these are the 10 objects of reflection, things that Buddhist monks should, as the Buddha said, frequently reflect upon, and certainly applicable, for the most part, to all Buddhists and especially those who have undertaken Buddhist meditation. It's good for us to reflect on why we're here and what we're doing and what are the benefits of what we're doing and the value of our undertaking as Buddhists. So something to appreciate about ourselves and to appreciate about everyone who comes to undertake the practice of the Buddhist teaching, that they have certainly some or all of these taken to heart and appreciated the value of the Buddhist teaching in terms of satisfying the concerns related in these 10 reflections. So, a Dhamma that is very well known in Buddhist circles and something that is circulated in monastic communities quite commonly. So something that is of value for all of us, something that we should always keep in mind. The sorts of things that we should, for the most part, all reflect upon. So that's the Dhamma for today.